All right. On your table there is a outline. Looks like this. Says the sixth commandment on there. It's just a guide for you guys. I know y'all are y'all have little booklets as well, but I wanted to provide something. It also has the discussion questions on the back of it, that, discussion starters that y'all can use as well. But for me, as I was looking through this, I feel like this is a lot of information, so I want to simmer it down a little bit. So that's one of the reasons I created an outline. First, I just want to kind of start off with, I'm not going to talk about the larger catechism, but I did want to just share this, is that God's law, I don't know if y'all run into this, but I run into this a lot working with college students, is a lot of times there's this mindset that the Old Testament doesn't matter, you know, that we're in the New Covenant and the New Testament, and those old laws and those old things that were taught in that in the Old Testament don't really matter. They don't really apply. We just need to listen to Jesus and listen to Paul and these guys in the New Testament, and we'll be okay. And in some ways, that's truthful, but that's only truthful because Paul and Jesus were quoting the Old Testament the whole time when they're writing the New Testament. So that's the only essence in which that is true. But the Old Testament, the law is very applicable, and I love my boss, Benny Parks. He always talks about the three uses of the law, and he talks about first that the law is very useful to teach us how we are to honor and glorify God. It's to train us. It's a ruler. It's a teacher in our lives. The second use of the law is that it restrains evil in the world. And we'll see that even as we look at this commandment, the sixth commandment. And then the third use of the law is that it shows us our need for Christ. It shows us our need for Christ. And so I was going to, I first want to look at this real quick in light of that third use of the law in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, he actually talks about the law. And so if you want to turn there in your Bibles with me, we'll look at that really briefly, and then we'll jump into the sixth commandment. But Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, 5:17 says, "Do not think that I've come to abolish the law or do away with the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless the righteousness exceeds that of these scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." And so I don't know about you, when I read that at first, I'm like, whoa, that's a high standard that Jesus is calling us to, right? But when we look at the text, and it reminds us that Jesus doesn't say we are to fulfill the law. It says he is going to fulfill the law. And so it just point the law, that third point that I said, it shows us our need for Christ, because Christ fulfills the law in every way. And so we end up fulfilling the law because he gives us his righteousness when we trust in him and believe in him. And so that's the way that we're even more righteous than these scribes and Pharisees back in the day when those guys were trying to achieve righteousness and obey the law. And so so just want to set that foundation of this really points us to the gospel. It really points us to our need for Christ, to trust in him, to live for him. But it also helps us, in a sense, fulfill the gospel, and because it helps us to trust in him and love him and apply his righteousness and his fulfillment of the law to our lives, and reminds us of that need for that. So let's look at Exodus 20:13, and you can actually hold your finger on Matthew 5 because we're going to come back there in a second. But Exodus 20:13 says, "You shall not murder." It's pretty simple thing. It's almost like I could just feel like, in some sense, I wish I could just read that and walk up the stage. That's it. That's the bottom line. But even in this text, it's a simple, you know, few words, sentence, verse, "You shall not murder," pretty clear, right? But even in that Hebrew word, and everybody should have this, is, you don't have to go to seminary and learn Hebrew to see this, but if you look down at the bottom, I know in my Bible, and if you have an ESV Bible, it has a number 3 beside the word murder. And if you go down to the bottom of your page in real small handwriting, it says, the Hebrew word also covers or includes causing human death through carelessness or negligence. Carelessness or negligence. And so it takes it a little bit further. It takes it a step further. And I think that's where the catechism is really helpful, as it helps us see that. And then we go to Jesus, back to Jesus in Matthew 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, and looking at verse 21. 5:21, he says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and 'Whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to counsel. And whoever says, 'You fool,' will be liable to the hell of fire." And Jesus does this with the idea, I think next week y'all are going to talk about adultery. You should not commit adultery. And the 7th commandment, Jesus does this there as well. As Jesus doesn't just, you know, hit you directly with, don't do this. But he takes it so much further. He takes it into the heart. And he talks about anger. Because if I would have bet, and I know a lot of you guys in this room, and we might have a murderer in here, but my bet is that we don't have any murderers in here. But we have a lot of men, like I do, that struggle with anger, or have struggled with anger at times in your life. So Jesus really takes it to a deeper level and talks about anger in the heart, and how even in that, in our thoughts, in our hearts, in our minds, if we're struggling with anger, that in some ways we're guilty of the 6th commandment, of breaking it. And so let's look now to, so I wanted to share that kind of some foundational thoughts, and then just look, if I could give a simple definition of murder, it would be any unjust taking of another person's life. Any unjust taking of another person's life. And again, as I've already said, from the Hebrew text and from the New Testament text, we see it's a little bit more than that. It's a lot more than that, as we'll expand upon. So looking at question 134, it's on your sheet here. It, from the larger catechism, it says, what is the 6th commandment? The 6th commandment is, you shall not murder. And then question 135, what are the duties required in the 6th commandment? And I like this because I like the way this larger catechism does this, because the first thing that it does is it puts it in the positive. It says, what are you supposed to do? And so what does it require from us? It says the duties in the 6th commandment are all manner of careful efforts and lawful endeavors, and I use the modern English version, sorry, lawful endeavors to preserve the life of ourselves and others by resisting all thoughts and purposes, subduing all passions, and avoiding all occasions, temptations, and practices which tend to the unjust taking away of anyone's life. This includes the following: the just defense of lives against violence, patiently bearing the hand of God with quietness of mind and cheerfulness of spirit, sober use of food, drink, medicine, sleep, labor, and recreations, charitable thoughts, love, compassion, meekness, gentleness, and kindness, peaceable, mild, and courteous speeches and behavior, forbearance, readiness to be reconciled, patient bearing and forgiving of injuries, and returning good for evil, and comforting and supporting the distressed and protecting and defining the innocent. And I'm not going to comment on all these, but because I'm going to kind of summarize them in a few minutes with four main points that I want to just get across. But as you look at these, you see that it's not just about our outward actions. I love the second one that says, patiently bearing the hand of God with quietness of mind and cheerfulness of spirit. That's not just, when I think about that, that's very convicting. Because it's not just how we treat people on the outside. It's how we think about people. It's how we feel about people. And so God has, through his word and through these guys that wrote these catechisms, he is using it to take it to a whole nother level. And then even the fourth one down, charitable thoughts, love, compassion, meekness, gentleness, and kindness, the fruits of the Spirit. Part of the way that we fulfill the sixth commandment is that we live out, that we're living a spirit-filled life, and that the fruits of God's Spirit are being manifested in our lives. The next one down, peaceable, mild, and courteous speeches and behavior. So it's not just what we do to people, but how we talk to people. I don't know about you guys, but I always get in trouble. If my wife... In my marriage, we probably all have one of those things like, I always get in trouble for this. I don't know. Most men I know have something that their wives want to change about them. Unless you're perfect like Jason Ellerby. But my wife always says, what you said is right, but the way you said it is wrong. You know, be more gentle. And so that's where I'm always getting in trouble. It's not what I'm saying. It might be true. But it's how I'm saying it. She wants me to be kind. She wants me to be sweet. And part of helping us fulfill what the requirements of the sixth commandment is in our speech. Are we communicating in a way that's life preserving? It's life giving. And so, but I'm going to move on to the next one because I want to give you all plenty of time to discuss. Question 136. These are things that are forbidden. This is more the negative aspect of the sixth commandment and the way they wrote this. The sins forbidden in the sixth commandment are the following: all taking away of the life of ourselves or of others, except in the cases of public justice, lawful war, and necessary defense. Neglecting or withdrawing the lawful and necessary means of the preservation of life. Sinful anger, hatred, envy, and desire for revenge. All excessive passions and distracting cares, immoderate use of food, drink, labor, and recreations, provoking words, oppression, quarreling, striking, wounding, and whatever else tends to the destruction of life of anyone. And so, again, just it takes it to a whole nother level, deep into our lives, into our hearts, into our minds. As we think about fulfilling the sixth commandment, it's not just what we do outwardly or what we don't do, but it goes into every area of our life. One of the ones that I was thinking a lot about is this idea of excessive passions and a moderate use of food, drink, labor, and recreations. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that more in a second, but if we overindulge in things like alcohol, the Bible doesn't say not to drink or that we can't drink as believers. It says don't get drunk. But if we're drinking so much that we cause harm to our body and we shorten our life, we've committed the sixth commandment. We've murdered ourselves. If we eat too much, if we're overindulging at the dinner table over and over and over again, that's part of what this is saying. It's saying that we're, and it shortens our life because our health is poor, then we're not loving our neighbors as ourselves. And we're not fulfilling the sixth commandment. And so Anyways, y'all are going to discuss that more, but I just wanted to hit on a few more little, these 4 points, and then give y'all some discussion questions. Why is murder wrong? Why is murder wrong? And I think this is really key, foundational thought. Sorry, I'm trying not to hit this thing. The bottom line reason why murder is wrong, or there's two main reasons. One is that we were made in God's image. We were made in God's image. And that is why murder is wrong. That's the primary reason why it is wrong. And so that's why it's not wrong or sinful to kill an animal. They're not made in God's image, but we're made in God's image. And then the second reason is that God, He is the Lord of life and death, not us. He's the Lord of life and death. Number two, is all killing of men murder? Is all killing of men murder? No. Protecting life. So the scenario, I think I've heard Olin share this scenario multiple times, and from his own life, our own story as a thought and an idea. Is if someone is breaking into your house and you have to kill that person to protect your wife and kids, that would not be murder. That would be a just cause because you're protecting life. And so any circumstance where you're protecting life, and it's necessary to kill another person in order to keep that commitment to protect life, then that's not wrong or sinful. Another way is in serving our nation's military. The Bible is clear in Romans 13 that God has put our government in charge to protect us. And when we serve the government, by being in the military, then we can kill in the defense of our country, the kill in the defense of if someone approaches our borders or is wanting to harm other people. Those are just killings because we're acting as an agent of our government that God has empowered, that God has put in place. And then thirdly, Capital punishment. God instituted capital punishment. You can look there, but if you read in Genesis 9:6, after the flood, basically God says, man is made in my image, and if you kill man, then your life needs to be taken to protect my image. So those are some practical things, some direct things that I wanted to address. And then third, our focus should be to preserve life and forbid whatever tends to destroy life. We see this a lot with kids, right? Some of you probably already have some of y'all have your kids out of the house. I know we have guys in different stages or just having kids or haven't had kids yet. But part of the way we help fulfill the sixth commandment is by protecting them. Right? It's by not giving them a gun to play with or a knife to play with. And if we see them playing with something that's going to harm them or hurt them, we take it away. We protect them from sharp objects. We don't let them stick their fingers in light sockets, etc. The second way that we should be preserving life and preventing or forbidding whatever tends to destroy life is by not risking life unnecessarily. For a thrill. And so it doesn't mean we can't do fun things, but I think we have to be wise and in the way that we operate and the things that we do. And so this guy, G.I. Williamson, he gives the example of just people getting too close to the edge of a cliff. And I don't know if y'all are aware of this, but in like the last couple of years, that's been one of the number one causes of death amongst young people because they want to get a selfie on the edge of a cliff. And so they'll get as close to the cliff as they can and try to take a picture. And there's story after story of people falling off cliffs. And so they're unnecessarily putting themselves at risk just for the thrill, just for that selfie picture. Third thing is to avoid, and I've talked about this a little bit, but avoid excess and overindulgence. Pursue temperance and use all things in moderation that tend to destroy life. And so there's probably only two things, and there's probably a doctor in here who would tell me I'm wrong about one thing, but you can drink probably as much water as you want to drink, you know, and it not hurt you. And you can have as much Jesus as you want, and it's not going to hurt you. Those are the only things we don't have to be temperate about in our life. But everything else, food, drink, money, stuff, whatever it is, if we have too much of it, it will eventually destroy us and bring destruction in our life. And then the fourth way of thing that I want to point out about the sixth commandment is keeping the sixth commandment in the highest sense of the word. And I just love this as I was studying and reading and preparing for this. This guy, G.I. Williamson, it's commentary on the shorter catechism, but he's commenting on the same commandment. But he says, and I put this quote in your, I believe I put it on your page so you could look at it and have it. But it says, the Christian, in other words, knows that Christ came in order that we might have life everlasting. The Christian, therefore, must exert himself in order to seek eternal life for those who are in the way of death. If our neighbor is on the way to destruction and we do not make any attempt to warn him, are we not guilty then of the most heinous violation of this commandment? Then he quotes from James 5:20, let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. So what is this saying? I'll put this in layman's terms. One of the ways we help preserve life and fulfill and not break the sixth commandment is by sharing our faith with other people that are dying, spiritually dying. But also sharing our faith and preventing them from destroying their life and the lives of those people around them by sharing the good news of Jesus and Jesus rescuing them from a life of destruction. So I don't know if y'all ever, that really hits me. I travel home to Georgia. I'm from there originally, about 3 hours away. I'll just close with this story. But if God wouldn't have rescued me, there's no telling where I would be, but I tend to think about it because I have some friends that were on the exact same path, partying, drinking, girls, had put all their life and significance in sports, and they're stuck. They're in the same place. They're in their third, fourth marriage with kids from different women. They're living in a lot of them dumps. Barely working, you're driving old, crappy cars. And not that it's all about where you live and all that kind of stuff, but my point, they're addicted to alcohol, drugs. And so sometimes it's good for me just to imagine what God has rescued me from and going home and hearing about some of my friends and seeing some of my friends. It's a great reminder for that destruction that God had rescued me from. And that's part of the way we help fulfill the sixth commandment by not murdering is that, again, that we help save people from destruction, like the men who shared the gospel with me and help preserve my life from destruction. So over 20 plus years ago. So discussion topics, hopefully this time will be really fruitful. I'm just going to read through these real quick, make sure they make sense. But the first one is, it's kind of a, hopefully y'all enjoy talking about this and it'll create some good discussion, but discuss this scenario in light of the sixth commandment. If Hitler were a baby and you had the power to kill him and prevent the death of millions of humans, would you do it? Why or why not? In light of the sixth commandment. Look at Matthew 5:20-21 and discuss the implications and potential applications from Jesus' commentary on the sixth commandment. And then looking back at the question and answer from 135 and 136. What challenges you most? What would be your own example of something that endangers life? And what would be an example of something that preserves life? And then discuss that last point, the highest duty involved with the sixth commandment. So that's it. So y'all can break in your groups, discuss, and thank y'all for having me.